know, your ass better call somebody.
Research and development. Putting in the man hours to study the science of what you need.
Last week, we put liquid paper on a bee. And it died.
What?
Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
Can I tell you something without you getting angry? I love you. Yeah, you big guy.
I love you too.
Welcome back in, everybody, to another edition of the 4D Chess Dynasty Football Podcast. Thank you so much for tapping in and hitting play. Man, Friday, this is coming out. And everything gets kicked off on Thursday night. So you kind of get to see, hopefully you don't have a lot of Titans, because I don't think that's going to go very well for you. But maybe your Dallas helps you get that little bit of edge in your championship week. But the big ones, Sundays. And then we got a hell of a Monday night matchup to finish it off with a lot of fantasy implications. So I think we are set up for a phenomenal championship week. Now let's just hope it's starting off so bad already with all these damn injuries and all these stars being out and last minute pivots that we have to make and quarterbacks being sent home for the rest of the year. It's not the greatest, but we wish everybody a happy week 17 championship week. And we hope, if you're in the finals, you're going to win some damn money this week. But let's not skip over the fact, man. How you doing, Adam? Welcome in, buddy.
Happy, man. In a couple of championships, you know, and we're going to see what happens. A lot of people are already not playing. Injuries, Derek Carr is being sent home. We're getting to get, you probably didn't think it was coming, but we're going to get another Jared Stidham show. We're going to get a lot of crazy crusty shows. We got the Nick Foles bad experience last week in the Colts game. We're going to really test some patience of some dynasty managers who are finally in the title game and are looking at some clunkers coming their way. We just did the trade show, and we had a Hassan Haskins trade where that was the primary featured player in a best ball league. So it's getting gross out here, Mike. I'm ready, though, man. Week 17. It's title time. Let's go win one.
Absolutely, Wolf. Well, tonight what we're going to do is we have a YouTube giveaway that we did on our channel. If you want to go check out our YouTube channel anytime, just hop over there. But we did do a YouTube giveaway with our patrons at our patreon.com/SouthHarmon. And the winner of it, one of them, we had 10.
Yep.
Picked the topic for the 4D Chess Dynasty podcast, but it's actually a fantastic one, and one that I thought about doing anyways. And it's, what are the biggest things that we learned this year that we're going to apply and change in strategy heading into next year, Adam? So being in week 17, man, I'll start this off. The number one thing that comes to my mind when I saw this topic and I've thought about it for multiple weeks, the biggest thing that I learned, the first one, is how damn important having liquidity is on my teams. And it doesn't matter if it's a rebuilder. On a rebuilder, I want all the liquidity possible. But on a contender, I didn't do a good enough job this year of having extra liquidity around, right? Too many of my contending teams, even in best ball, were built in July and August and September. And Adam, now we're sitting here. Now, some of these made it to the championship rounds, but I'm thinking, like, how much could I clean up in these leagues with no trade deadline? If I still had 23 picks, if I still had 24 picks, right? I had extra thirds laying around where I could go buy some of these spots, start shitty running backs, some of these kind of guys just to plug into my basketball teams, you know, the Rashid Shaheeds of the world. You go out and you find the Juwan Johnson, or you find the Jerick McKinnon, who's been on a hot streak as of late. I don't have enough liquidity on some of these contenders because I'm envious of the people who do, who have made it to the championship and do have those pieces laying around. But even throughout the season at various times, you know, you find yourself in like those middle of the road teams where they're just not going as well. I think I need to be more comfortable being in that kind of like no man's zone, Adam, where I don't need to be completely all in. But I don't need to be completely all out and play more of the variance, right? and play that getting into the playoffs at the 5 or 6 seed, or getting in the playoffs at the 3 or 4 seed, and being comfortable with it as long as I have enough assets to push in at the right time when I want to. When more of the chips are on the table, when more of the injuries have been decided, and more of the pictures of who's playing and who's getting the snaps and who's getting the touches and who's established themselves is far more clear. I think the problem has been not having liquidity and then pushing in too soon and kind of jumping the gun. And that's definitely something next year when I build a lot of these teams, Adam, I'm going to be more patient. I'm going to be diamond handing my own draft picks, even if I think they're going to be late, and not just throwing away so willy-nilly. And I'm going to be more aggressive in trying to acquire third-round picks. More aggressive in trying to collect all those extra assets that people just seem to throw away on a whim.
Yeah.
For these exact moments.
Yeah, I think the draft pick one is one that's very eye-opening. I think, like, I think we all know this. And when you play enough, you start to see it play out. I think this year in particular, and the reality is maybe it just didn't hit us as hard in other years. Maybe we didn't quite have enough of the variance of the attrition that took place. But the reality is the last few years, there has been attrition in the worst times. And we just talked about it at the start of the show, what there is going on in this point of the season, week 17, how many people are not going to be playing. And Mike, here's what I saw. Two of the leagues that I like the most, like, I, you know, we all have our leagues that we're in big portfolios, right? But there's obviously some you pay more attention to than others, or you're kind of like, this team is ready to go more so than others, right? You kind of planned out. And this is both in lineup and best ball, which I think gave me more insight. Like in best ball, I kind of thought, you know, and I still do, but if you build it correctly in the off season, you can kind of forego not having your pick because you can basically load up on so much depth and talent that even if some things go wrong, I feel strategically enough about myself that I can make up the fact that I didn't have the perfect season, right? If you have enough depth, I think you can do that. The problem is I saw this even in best ball, Mike, with a team where I thought this team is just unreal. And I ended up sneaking in the playoffs with a bunch of moves I made, but I ended up losing in the wild card. Had, you know, Lamar didn't play. I didn't have Trey Lance, and Kenny Pickett was on concussion in the wild card weekend, right? Geno was my only quarterback of consequence. I added Brett Rippon. That doesn't even really count in Superflex, right? I had one quarterback. So the point with all that, in best ball even especially, what I think the last part you said there, right? Diamond handing your own pick. Now, liquidity I think is important on best ball, even if it's not your own or lineup. But when you have your own pick, what I found out in a lineup league, Mike, is this. Your flexibility is taken away. And I think that's one thing that people don't understand quite enough of. So I had a team in lineup that's built great too, right? Problem with this team, Mike, and I'll pull up the team just to kind of give you an idea of how tragically wrong everything went, right? So I had Dak get hurt early, all right? So I had Cam Akers be relegated to absolutely nothing based on what we thought he was going to be. I had DeAndre Swift playing no snaps, getting hurt early. I had Matthew Stafford get hurt, right? You're talking about both my quarterbacks were not playing well or hurt at bad periods of time. DJ Moore, great guy that we love, but didn't do anything. Kyle Pitts, right? Kyle Pitts was awful and then got hurt. Like the only, I still had some really good players on this team, Travis Kelce and AJ Brown, Saquon Barkley. But in lineup, that's not enough in Superflex when you have all those other things going wrong. And this is a team that I was already loaded with picks. Mike, but here's the thing. I had 6 23 firsts, but I was so convinced mine was going to be 110, 111, 112. I didn't have my own pick. So guess what happens?
Yep.
Now, what's crazy is even with all that liquidity, I didn't have the flexibility to say, I still was trying to go win because I didn't have my own pick. So I'm trying to make it later. If I have my own pick in that scenario, I'm far more comfortable moving off of Barkley at a premium when he's killing it, right? I'm able to make the direction down much more easily because I have my own pick as opposed to saying, this team still should be a contender. Once I get in the playoffs, I'll be good as opposed to letting someone just be gifted what ended up happening, be the 104, 105. Liquidity's big. I think that whole conversation's good. But when you have your own, I think the thing about it is, whether it goes right or wrong, you're flexible. If it goes wrong, you keep that pick because it can become so, so crucial. If I have the ability to take a failed contender with my pick and make it the 101 with appropriate moves, that's a massive, massive gain in Dynasty.
Yeah.
If I have a team that I don't think is contending, but it ends up being contending, and now I'm in a league where I can trade in the playoffs, I can now move that pick appropriately where I would have thought it was early, now in the playoffs when I'm actually going to need it. So the timing, I think, is the big thing.
I'm also not like saying if somebody does something stupid and they're like, you already have a strong team, and they're like, I'll give you Patrick Mahomes for your first round pick. Obviously, you know, break 75 tables on the way to go accept that deal. But we started off the year, you know, we talked about it. We did the episode when we were at the expo, like Antonio Gibson. People selling, you know, sell for any late first. And I'm like, I'll buy for any late first at this price. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about where I'm not going to do it. And it's not just Antonio Gibson. Some of those moves that I made and bought for late first, they paid off. But it's just not having the flexibility that I wish I had now at the most crucial time. The absolute most crucial time. And I will say this, Adam. The one difference, too, that I learned through all this to kind of tie it in with it is that there's variance in fantasy football all throughout. There is definitely, and we have seen it, you have seen it, you just talked about it, less variance in a properly constructed best ball team than there ever will be in a lineup team. Like, best ball, you can get by without having your first, right? Like, you have a quote-unquote failed contender in this best ball team without your pick, but you still made the playoffs, Adam. You didn't miss the playoffs. You miss the playoffs in a lineup league without your first. It is hugely detrimental. Like you almost have no shot in a lineup league if all those things start going wrong for you, Adam. And you're talking about, I just got Geno, I just got this guy. You know, I lost Kyle Pitts. Plus, I was pushing the button on Kyle Pitts for the first 4 weeks when he wasn't doing anything and actively hurting my team. That is very different than in best ball, where Kyle Pitts can be underperforming, or you could have your two starting quarterbacks get hurt, but maybe your third and fourth stringer are doing just enough to make your lineup and keep you afloat and get you a win against the median, or get you the spot win here and there against other teams and get you into the playoffs, where not having that pick isn't a gift to somebody else. You do that in a lineup league, it's over for you. Like, you'd be gifting somebody an early 23 first. Like, it is completely possible. So there's variance throughout, but there definitely is less variance in best ball, where you can be a little bit more comfortable without your pick. But still, in general, man, even if you have a trade deadline that's like week 13, think of all the moves you could have made at the end of the season to go buy, you know, not even for first, but Bam Knight when he was hot. And that would have got you weeks. You know, that could have helped you win a wild card game. You could have got a Mike White, you know, any of these guys out there that I talked about it earlier, the Jerick McKinnons who have been on a hot streak, like those guys, Cam Akers. When people are out on Cam Akers, what's he do? He comes in, he basically wins people weeks in the semifinals. And that guy, what, cost you a late second, maybe a second and a third, whatever the case would have been. But not having that capital to be able to trade at the time is what I'm really focused on, and making sure that I have those assets available, whether it's my own or other people's, but just having some sort of liquidity that I can move in when I see the opportunity to strike. And I will say this, and I want to diamond hand them in my best ball leagues, but I'm sure as hell diamond handing the piss out of my lineup leagues, because I've seen them go south fast. And you talked about flexibility. I had a similar team, Adam, where it's built for, like, I thought it was a really strong contender, but I just had some bad stuff happen in lineup. You know, I had some quarterback injuries. I had some running backs underperform. You know, Dalvin Cook hadn't been the greatest all year, and that's the guy who I'm relying on and starting every week as my RB2. Some of my wide receivers took some time to get going. I just had really awful luck, but by like week 7 or 8, I'm out there going, well, I have two directions to go. I still had my own first round pick. So if I want to tear this thing down to the roots and try to go for an early 23 first, I have that flexibility. But I also still have the draft capital if I can find a good enough deal maybe to shore up some spots. Maybe I can get in the playoffs and play the variants and try to win a championship. It ended up working out where I ended up trading away like the Dalvin Cooks, right? Trading away the Aaron Jones. Those were the best deals possible, getting back multiple first. And now I'm sitting there with, you know, my own pick being the 102 plus a couple other firsts. And I feel good about that team, but not having that flexibility if I would have traded away my first earlier in the season where I'm forced to compete like you were talking about, that I don't like it. I don't want to be in that spot because anybody with a brain can look and go too, like, oh, he doesn't have his first. He has to compete. Like, he has to push these chips in. I'm not giving him a sweetheart deal, but if you can go either way, if you can go either direction, nobody knows what really your game plan is. I'll send out one offer that looks like I'm competing to you, but then I'll go to the guy right next to you and send out an offer where it looks like I'm tanking. And whichever one of you takes the offer, that's the direction that I'm picking. So I like having that flexibility. For me, the biggest thing, draft capital is the one thing I learned. Having the liquidity, having the ability to move pieces in and out as I see fit and as I wanted to strike. How about you? What was one of the biggest things you learned this year, Adam?
Well, obviously that was one for both of us, but let me give you a part two or the second thing I think we need to talk about. So whether it's lineup or best ball, right? I think we both will agree in Dynasty Degenerates, in best ball, because of the way the game works, right? If you construct your roster appropriately, there's so much depth that you can afford. Like, Mike, that team that I had in best ball that ended up making the semis and lost in the first round still scored very well. It just, I had bad luck. I literally had the most points for scored against me by a mile. Right? I had seven huge injuries. Swift was bad. Trey Lance got hurt. Lamar got hurt untimely. I mean, I had injuries left and right. Still made the playoffs, right? Still, honestly, like, given all of that, had a chance to win. Had things actually broken right at the right time. So in best ball, I'll make the pivot with my pick if the time... Even if the time's not right, if the deal presents itself in the off season, I'll do it in best ball a little more likely than I would in lineup. But, Mike, either way, what I've learned is obviously protecting your own picks, the flexibility you have with your own pick, but what am I willing early to invest in? So I think that's the big part for me in Dynasty Degenerates I want to talk to you guys about is what are we going to invest in early? So... Like, we just talked about what we don't want to do. Learning experiences, right? Cam Akers had a great week last week. Three touchdowns. The teams that I was in the playoffs with, I had him in, won because he hurt me getting to the playoffs. Awesome. But all the 23 firsts, if I spent a 23 first to get him, bad investment. I don't care how much you like Cam Akers or hate him. Even if things would have went right for him, it's not the best investment, right? A guy who's coming off an Achilles injury, you know, year three of his career, even if it breaks right, it's just not the right investment. That position, that situation doesn't make sense based on how the values fall. If I'm going to invest my first early, right? So what am I going to do that for? If I can get into the top 12 quarterbacks, even if it's more than just my first, like, I'm going to do that. Because, like, let's take a look, right? Cam Akers, even coming off that week, Mike, when I look at Keep Trade Cut, he's not a first pager. He's not a second pager, barely a second pager, right? He's like barely inside the top 100 after a massive week.
Mm-hmm.
Kyler Murray had a horrible season and is hurt. Kyler Murray is 24th overall on Keep Trade Cut's page, right? Like, the variance of where he's going to fall, even in that's the worst case scenario for Kyler Murray, right? Didn't have a good season. Got hurt, season ender, might not start the season next year. Still a top 25 overall player asset in Dynasty. Like, even if I lost, it all went wrong with Kyler Murray, I'm safe there. I'm secure. So if I get a top 12 quarterback, I'll do it. I think the eye-opener for me is if I can get a true elite receiver, and I think we have to be cautious about who that type player is. Ja'Marr Chase, the top five guys for sure, Justin Jefferson, A.J. Brown, CeeDee Lamb, young guys with good profiles that are highly valuable receivers. Also, I will make the move for those guys. They're going to retain value. Jamar Chase got hurt this year. It was as if he didn't even lose any value, right? Mm-hmm. And then I look at tight end too, Mike, the elite ones. So Mark Andrews. Mark Andrews hasn't done dick all. I mean, think about this. He has not done a damn thing for how many weeks now? He doesn't have a quarterback. Lamar's not playing. There's turmoil on if he's going to come back to the Ravens. Doesn't matter. Top 30, 35 asset, tight end premium, period. Like, elite tight ends, difference-making wide receivers, quarterbacks, I don't care. Like, I will move my pick regardless. Like, those are positions I will do it for. You could probably do it still for a Breece Hall type, like Bijan Robinson. But look at how Breece Hall's working, right? Even Breece Hall went out smashed, got hurt. You're going to retain some value there. But it maybe is a little more risky to do that with him. But if you did it with Bijan and Bijan went out and got hurt, you're still going to have some value insulation. The point I'm making is the fringy guys early, the value insulation isn't there, right? The aging running back, Alvin Kamara, right? If he would have missed the rest of the year, that's a cratering asset. Cam Akers going into year three off an Achilles, cratering asset. Gibson, B-Rob, whatever you think of him, these are the cratering assets you don't want to early put your 23 or your 24 chips on. What you want to do is somebody that has value insulation if it goes wrong.
I think for me too, when you're talking about this, Adam, these, you know, so much of going into the season, you know, was me being combative or trying to fight it. And you kind of talked about it with Cam Akers, but we had Gibson, we had plethora of people who are like, you know, sell for any first, or, you know, these guys aren't worth a first. So if you can get off them for this, go ahead. And I fought back against it, where I was like, I'll buy these guys. I'll buy these guys. I'll buy these guys. I'll say this. If I want to tie these 2 points together, Adam, I think what I learned when you're talking about this is that I'm willing to do it for, I don't want to do it for a single player straight up, right? That just feels like a bad range. It feels like a bad bet that you're going to make your first versus this player actually being good. Now, some of them are stupid obvious, where it's like, you know, sell Davante Adams for any first. Well, I still think Davante Adams has another couple years in, right? Still has another couple years in, and he showed it this year. Or like a Tyreek Hill, like some of these guys we were down on. I think those are the ones you can get into. But we've seen stuff in the past where they've been elite difference makers. The ones I want to stay away from are the Cam Akers or the Antonio Gibsons or Christian Kirk. Like these kind of guys where we're betting on potential. We're betting on youth. We're betting on them actually having a breakout that they may not ever have. And if they do, the payoff isn't as great as we'd like to hope. And if they don't, the consequences are detrimental. So I think I'm going to shy away from doing those kind of moves a lot more and being more in line with taking that first, applying it with another player like in that range, you know, like a first in Cam Akers, and trying to go to the elite of the elite range, right? I know Jonathan Taylor can be a difference maker, and I'm more willing to make a bet on JT and be disappointed in a season like this because he may have a bounce back next year where he's back to being an elite war player. Like he's back to being that league winner, where if I guess wrong and he has a bad year this year, the landing is a lot softer because I still think JT has another 2-3 years in him where he can be and has been in the past that elite, just plug and play, don't worry about it running back that'll last for a while. But even more so, there's not a lot of running backs outside of JT that you want to do that with in regards, right? That's another point that we'll get to. But I'm looking at the other positions, which are the true difference makers, right? Taking those kind of assets and your first and going up into what you talked about, the elite of the elite quarterback range, right? Going up into those guys, paying the Pied Piper to go get a Patrick Mahomes or a Josh Allen or Jalen Hurts or, you know, even a Joe Burrow, right? Like those kind of guys that are going to last for a while and have been elite in the past or can be elite for a while going forward. But also more so like these wide receivers, right? There's a lot of wide receivers or you know, the people like Kelce. I couldn't believe, you know, how dare you pay a Pat Freiermuth and your first to go to Travis Kelce in the preseason? That's crazy. I'll take the tear down all the time. And then you find out that Travis Kelce is one of the biggest difference makers and the reason a lot of people made championships and are going to win money this year. Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
And why? He's been elite for a while, Adam, and you're just making the simple bet that he's going to continue to be elite, at least for this year and maybe next year and maybe a year after that. Those are the easy bets to make. They look bad at the time, and I did too much shitting on people for doing it, and I regret it wholeheartedly, right? The whole trade away Justin Jefferson and Ja'Marr Chase, right? Trade away these wide receivers while they're at peak value because they can't go anywhere than up. Maybe in dynasty value, they can't, Adam. Maybe they can't go any higher. Maybe they can't get drafted any higher in startup. But what they mean to your team if you have them right now is the difference between you being in the championship and potentially winning and sitting on the outside going like, shit, I shouldn't have teared down from Ja'Marr Chase to, you know, the shitty wide receiver and a draft pick. I shouldn't have done this, right? I should have been on the opposite end and paying the draft pick and the shitty wide receiver to go get Ja'Marr Chase when he was available. So I think for me, that's when I tie warp together, when I tie liquidity and how I want to construct rosters, that's the only way that I'm going to be pushing those chips in at an early time is if I have an opportunity to get to that elite range. And you just got to take them when you get them. You just got to say, fuck it and go for it.
Yeah. And I think the last part of that is like in the 4D process, right? Okay. So I think, Mike, the one difference I would say, I'm not saying you said this is necessarily incorrect, but like had the Rams come out, there were a lot of things had to happen based on what we thought, right? We thought the Rams were going to be good. We thought this team was going to score a lot of points. They brought in Allen Robinson. We thought that was an ad that was worthy of something. We thought Matthew Stafford was going to be better. We thought obviously Cooper Kupp was good, but the whole offense as a whole was bad. But let's say the offense was good. This was still a Super Bowl contender and Cam Akers was smashing. Yeah, he's probably worth the 23 first. Actually, I think people are very much in on Cam Akers, but okay, that's still probably in the 23 first range, right? Like what you add, if it goes right, is not enough from what the bottom is. I think that's the big thing. And Mike, here's the point I want to make to really drive that home when you think about 4D, because we also talk about you can move the asset at any time, right? Think about the 22 class, which doesn't have the 23 hype, all right? There is a single player that went in the first round every time that's worth less than Cam Akers right now. Sky Moore.
There it is. Yep.
Everybody else, I don't even care. Like, Mike, Jameson Williams has not played, and when he has played, has not played.
Yes.
Keep Trade Cut has him a top 50 player in Superflex. Like,
damn.
Treylon Burks, right? Polarizing. Wide receiver one, best player in the class. Asthma, doesn't play all the time. He's hurt, has good weeks, has bad weeks. Malik Willis is in, kills his value.
Still valued above him.
Wide receiver 22, right? It doesn't matter. Jahan Dotson, who was basically a second-round pick in most of these leagues, right? And has had a very hot and cold and injury-riddled season. Top 70 player in Dynasty. So there's just a – you're making a bet on an asset that even if it doesn't do well, like it has to be a Sky Moore season where it goes to an offense which is supposed to be great and it just completely flops the entire time for it to be worse than what Cam Akers is. So when I look at what it could – when you make the bet on the fringy guy, even if it's a polarizing upside player that has potential, what that could amount to versus what it could crater to, it's way, way worse on the risk side than the reward side.
You don't want to be left holding the bag, right?
You don't.
Could it pay off? Yeah, it could. And we've done it in the past, right? And I think that's why we've been more apt or open to it.
Mm-hmm.
But this year, you know, when I combine the first two things that we learned, Adam, like I can't do it, right? For multiple reasons. I can't do it because what you just said, the payoff, could it be worth it? Yeah. Is the downside really bad? Absolutely. And how do I want to construct my teams? I'd rather have the liquidity. I'd rather keep the draft pick because I can do so much with it at so many different times throughout the season, right? I'm not locked into, I bought Cam Akers in August. And now I'm sitting here with shit on my face, right? I could be sitting here in championship week going like, hey, who wants the 112? And there's all kinds of people with turds out there, right? I think about all these basketball leagues. What the 112 could buy you could be like four or five pieces of just absolute turds that people don't value or don't think are going to be worth anything next year. but would actually help you win a week, right? Actually help you win the championship. You could go out and buy a Jerick McKinnon, a Bam Knight, and a Brock Purdy, and it probably doesn't cost the 112. You know what I mean? Somebody would be like, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'll get off these guys for sure. You can have them. I'll take the 112 and I'll re-roll into a rookie. I'm not playing for money right now, so this is perfect. But it works out for both parties. So I'd much rather be in that position when it comes to crunch time than to do this in July and August and go like, oh, well, glad Cam Akers finally showed up 1 week this year and actually did something.
Yeah, no question. And I think, Mike, you know, as I'm thinking about, you know, the things we learned and, you know, we got this question posed to us. Mike, I think another thing for me, and I wouldn't say this is something I learned per se this year. Like, I've known this is probably the thing, but I saw happen time and time again. And I think, Mike, this one is not as, like, defining per se. We could talk about what we think makes sense for this scenario. But in season, man, in Dynasty Degenerates, I promise you, if you're playing and you've been tapped into this, you have seen this too now this year. And if you think about this, this is one of the harder things to do because when in the year, right, you're thinking this guy is smashing and why would I ever move this player? But in season, when guys are getting to peak value, man, it is the hardest thing to do because you want to win. And there's the money aspect of winning now. But if you can have enough combination of savviness and common sense and detaching yourself from names like we talk about all the time, you can move off of so many assets that just, I don't care what happens, you win in dynasty value, period. Like Saquon Barkley, right? We told everybody, do not sell this prospect right now in the offseason because he's at an all-time low. There's just no way he's going to go lower. Mm-hmm. Comes out and smashes. He's going to win people leagues. Like, that's probably going to happen. But you're never going to get Saquon Barkley value after this year of what it was during the season. You could have traded for 2+ this year, right? You could have absolutely done it. You look at so many players like that, Mike, where outside of, like, the elite range quarterbacks, because they can retain that value for so long, like, when you get to a player, especially at the running back position, that's not one of these elite quarterbacks, and you can trade out of that. Like, Kenneth Walker hit that this year, right? Like, Kenneth Walker went from guy we hyped up a lot to dynasty RB1. If you can pivot out at that true price, it's hard to do in the moment because you want to win. But, man, you're just – there's no way you lose when you pivot out at that peak spot.
Right. You can just rinse and repeat every single year, every single year. And you just keep the cycle going, right? If you do it, you know, in 2020 and you net – 2 or 3 firsts for a guy who's at peak value, and you de-risk yourself, you're done. Then you go to the next year. Now you're up to 5 firsts total between the next guy that you sold off at the peak value. And then you go to 2022 and you do the same thing. Like, you could be sitting there getting a lot of people's throw-ins, right? You could be sitting there going, man, I've got 623 firsts and I still have a good team. Like, I still have the liquidity where I'm playing the variance. I'm in the playoffs. I'm the wild card team. Now let me see if I can buy some old crusty vets. Like, I want to keep these picks because I know these picks are going to be the 101. This is going to be the 104. This will be the 10, you know, whatever it is. But you might go out there and sell the 107 and get 4 or 5 pieces in a best ball team to get you over the hump. Or you might go out there and be able to buy. We just did a trade on the trade show where it's, you're buying a Tyreek Hill because of the Tua news being done, but you're in the championship right now. And what better way to just plug a dynamic wide receiver into your wide receiver spot than have the liquidity of the ability to go like, I got 2 firsts, I can send you for it. Like, I know this is the 110 and this next one in 2024 is going to be late. I want to buy Tyreek at a discount. I think this is probably the right price to pay. The little news, the whole thing works out for you in the long run when you look at it and go, man, if I just sell these players at peak value in season and play a little bit of the variance game, I accomplish everything that we've been talking about so far. Everything. I get the liquidity. I can go down to these lesser tiers, these guys who are like 1-year wonders, but I'm always churning out. I'm always having these picks. I'm always having the ability to go any direction that I feel like at any given time. And all it takes is, man, Kenneth Walker's playing well. I'm glad I hit on him in the rookie draft. I'm glad Mike and Adam talked me into drafting him at the 102 or the 103. He's now the Dynasty RB1. But you're 1,000% right, man. In the moment, it is so hard. So hard to come off of those guys. It's easy for the top quarterbacks because you know that they're so rare. They're so elite. They maintain their value forever. But it's so hard to do it with the Kenneth Walkers. It's so hard to do it with the your guy, George Pickens, right?
Right.
When he started getting all that hype, right? And then he actually started having this little bit of connection with Kenny Pickett. And he's rising up boards. It's like, I nailed it. I hit it. You gotta talk to yourself. You gotta go like, great, glad I did something awesome. Time to shop them around, try to see if somebody will pay me a first and 2 seconds for this guy, and I'll re-roll it later.
Yeah, and it's a hard thing to put your finger on, as far as actually like giving a definable, this is your cash out moment. But I think the more you play, the more you tap into this show, the more you tap into Destination Devi, Scott Connor, Ray, Jay Rich, Eric, Gene, like all these guys, you'll start to understand when guys are hitting peaks and when it's probably the right time to pivot out. And I'll use a couple examples, Mike, where maybe it didn't even work out right or wrong for you. But like, if you think about this for a second, right? Like, I'm going to give you some hard ones that worked out for a second. Okay, so when you look at what happened for Mark Andrews' season last year, right? How it started, how he was really coming along, and how he finished. I mean, this guy was absolutely on fire. Like,
yep.
He got to tight end one range. You're looking at this year, okay? Once again, the first 6 weeks of the season, Mike, I mean, this is solidified tight end one, right?
Yep.
26, like, you're thinking, man, this is my league winner for a long time. But, Mike, like, think about this for a second. And this is where I'm going to push back a little on the tight end position, as much as I think it's important to have an edge there if you can, even in tight end premium. It's just not the quarterback position. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's good. It can give you warp. Travis Kelce's giving you insane warp. But, like, it's not – the long-term security's not there. I think Mark Andrews is still probably tight end one for a lot of people. But he's not giving you shit in warp. He's not going to be the reason anybody's won a title this year, period. Like, even if they helped make this team good, he has not scored since the bye week. Easily, Mike, you could have traded Mark Andrews, if you would have detached yourself from the name, for George Kittle and a first plus, probably, like in these tight end heavy premium leagues. Like, I'm not exaggerating. You could have traded off Andrews for peak value, and you may have thought in the moment, like, man, did I just give away a title? Maybe you feel that way, but if you're getting the true max value out, you still have the liquidity to play with. If your team's constructed right, you can still do that on a contender. I think sometimes what's really hard is when you think you're a contender to move off the guy at the peak value. Because anyone will move off of Saquon on a rebuild or these guys on a rebuild. But when you're contending, can you thread the needle of like get replaceable points back in the positions which are not incredibly necessary and also have liquidity to play with later?
So you're talking about it, Adam, too. Like, one of the craziest things in regards to Mark Andrews, that ridiculous hot start and then just the fall from grace for the rest of the year. All the way down, tight end three and warp for our shit auction scoring, right? I'm looking at the data that Koopa put together for us. I mean, he's the 44th ranked player in warp, right? There's 20 running backs ahead of him and 9 receivers and 12 quarterbacks. So, like, he's basically replaceable when you get passed up by TJ Hockenson as more valuable in tight end warp, right? In just warp in general. It's kind of wild to think about, especially from a best ball perspective. But what you're saying right there, we know the heater like George Kittle has been on. Could you imagine like week 6, George Kittle is disappointing. You trade Mark Andrews for George Kittle and a first, like just something basic. You may have even gotten more out of it, right?
But you probably could have, yeah.
You just make that move and you sell off high. You're not even really making a bet on George Kittle. But now you're enjoying the fruits of the labor of George Kittle in the fantasy playoffs just being an absolute fucking monster for you. And I bet if you looked at just tight end warp for the last couple weeks, when it's really counted, like head and shoulders above everybody else, including Travis Kelce, And then you got that first, Adam. Like, you're sitting here in the playoffs, maybe in the semis, maybe in the championship round, and you look at some of these other guys on the warp list who are actually producing, who you can easily buy for that first. Easily. And it's not even your first. It may be some guy who missed the playoffs, right? Because he bought into Mark Andrews and then failed him at the last minute, right? And just knocked him out of the playoffs. You might be looking at the 107. You can't look and tell me that, like, if you needed to shore up your quarterback spot, you could go get a Geno Smith, right? Who's QB6 overall on the season in warp. Now, I don't know how that factors out for the last 3 weeks, but we have the ability and smart people who can actually run you the data and tell you and go, like, over the last 5 weeks, here's the top guys in warp, right? And you can get a good trend of where it's at, where to spend it. But you can go get a quarterback, and you may be able to go out and get, like, a, you know, just throwing a name out there, but like a Jamal Williams or a Devin Singletary or something like that for that single first. And now you're looking at it in a much better situation heading in. If you got Mark Andrews, like, now not a lot of people want to buy him. Maybe they want to buy him for future, but the value isn't what it was. It's not even close. Nobody's going to pay you what they would have paid you back in the day, week 6, which feels like forever ago. So definitely the smart move when you're talking about that, selling guys at the highest point, because it just opens up all the options. You get to liquidity. You get to de-risk yourself in case something happens. Like, Mark Andrews starts playing poorly. The offense looks bad. Lamar Jackson gets hurt. Tyler Huntley can't get anything going with Mark Andrews. And other tight ends have stepped up and kind of taken over in these last couple of weeks. But you have the assets. You got the safety net, right? You got another tight end back, and you got draft capital. So I do agree with you, man. Yeah. Like, I think absolutely fucking monumental on your teams to be able to go, I want to win. This guy has been helping me win. And if they're not one of these super elite quarterbacks, man, I think you just pivot off of them. And there's the only other two, like, positions I can really think about, Adam, that I wouldn't do, we talked about it a couple weeks ago, is just Travis Kelce, because he's just so different. Right, it didn't matter even when Mark Andrews was smashing, Travis Kelce was smashing harder.
Right,
he was still kicking his ass in warp. It didn't matter. Travis Kelce is just
but Mike, the difference different. There. Let me just say the difference there, and I'm with you. Is this too? Travis Kelce, because of his age, never commanded the hall that Mark Andrews did. I think that's the big caveat, right? Mark Andrews, you could have gotten youthful years of replacement. Like, this is your stud for 4, 5, 6 years. You could sell that. Because of that, it gives you an insane price. Where Travis Kelce, it's like, okay, what his warp is versus what his dynasty cost is, it doesn't amount to the same, which is why I'm not moving Kelce. And Mike, I'll say this, like, a guy in the same range, but for whatever reason, I watched so many different deals where he was getting the price where I'll sell. I know you're going to be like, this is revisionist history, everybody listening, that's fine. But you can go back and look at trade shows, you can listen to us talk. Like, Cooper Kupp was a guy that made the list for me as far as, like, what do you do, right? It's polarizing. He's smashing so hard, but this is a 28, 29-year-old receiver. Like, if you can give me in best ball 2 firsts and a replacement player, like, I know you, Scott, and I did the trade show, and it's like Rondale Moore. Mm-hmm. Best ball, I'll do that. Lineup, maybe not, but point is, those are the type of assets I think that when they peak and the dynasty value that you can recoup back is insane, like a Cooper Kupp, like a Mark Andrews, like Barkley at the peaks, it's not Patrick Mahomes. Like, it's not Josh Allen. Those guys can be really good for a long time and in Superflex. You don't want to move those guys unless you're getting back a significantly ridiculous haul where you're getting a stud 2 at quarterback. These other positions, I'm so much more willing, I think, year in and year out, Mike, seeing how this plays out, to take the risk, even if I think this maybe diminishes my chances smallly to win now. I think I have the liquidity to still buy back in if my team's still contending.
Would you do that with, and two guys come to mind right now, just how hard they're smashing and how well they're playing, and it's the two wide receivers from LSU and Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson. Do they kind of just pseudo feel like they're falling into that elite quarterback territory, just how much head and shoulders above the rest of the wide receiver group that they are? I mean, A.J. Brown has been dope. CeeDee Lamb has come on strong here lately. There's been some wide receivers that have stood up and said hello, right? You know, I love T. Higgins. He had a monster game last week. one of the only wide receivers that actually performed, and I know this from Bomb Squad, which I took a giant L to Mason in, with Devontae Adams, Mike Evans, DeAndre Hopkins, and Stephon Diggs, all not even making a best ball lineup, which I didn't think was ever going to happen, but here we are. I'm just shitting the bed. But with how well they're performing pretty much all year and being so head and shoulders above the rest with their age, do you feel like those are guys that you would pivot off of in these kind of moves, or have they kind of gotten into that? I'm not going to say untouchable, because nobody on my dynasty rosters is ever untouchable. There's always an offer you can make to get anybody, and I mean anybody.
Sure.
But with those guys, do they kind of get in there where, like, I just don't have a lot of incentive to move off of them, right? I don't have a lot of incentive to go down to a Christian Kirk in a couple first, or, you know, like one of these kind of moves.
No, you're right. So let me say this. I think the true elite quarterbacks, to me, it's getting close to the point, Mike, and we talked about this a lot in episodes in the summer, like learning experiences, right? With the elite quarterbacks, even if you're dangling a lot of firsts in front of me, if I don't project one of them like securely in the early range that I have a chance to control myself, to position myself for a quarterback back, it gets dicey, man. Right, even with all those firsts. So, like, even then, I'm going to need a haul plus a quarterback in the top 12 range typically to move off of those guys. Now, here's the thing with the wide receiver, right? And when I started this summer, we talked a lot about this. We talked about this, what we saw last year. Jamar Chase's rookie season, Justin Jefferson in his second year. We talked about how deep the position is, Mike. But here's what I have learned this year. And now this may not be the stickiest for how it's going to go forever. Like, if the 23 running backs come in and smash, maybe we see a little bit of difference with how running backs are valued. But today, what I've seen, Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase, points per game, are both top five receivers this season, right? They're both super youthful. They both carry this dynasty weight that's so big. Mm-hmm. Jamar Chase goes down and doesn't leave the territory. Like, even if he tears his ACL, he probably goes down a little further, but he doesn't leave top 10. Like, that's not really the case for most players at other positions outside of the elite group of quarterbacks, like I just talked about with Kyler Murray, right? The value insulation plus what they put in your lineup is what I think makes Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase different. Like, as crazy as this is, right? Think about CeeDee Lamb for a second. When Dak got hurt, people panicked on CeeDee for a bit, right?
Yeah.
CD, I don't care what you think or don't think about him, he got into a different range of territory of what people thought, and you could actually acquire CD reasonably. Like, Jamar Chase, even though there was an injury discount, quote-unquote, didn't really exist that much. It wasn't a big dip. I think Justin Jefferson and Jamar Chase, because they're scoring the same as, like, Tyreek Hill and Cooper Kupp were, you know, Stephon Diggs, these guys that are older that don't cost as much, but the value insulation's so high. Yeah, I think they've started to reach an area where, like, I think for me, I'll still trade them away. Like, I'm very much pro-trading them.
Mm-hmm.
But that's because you're going to have to pay me Stephon Diggs and a first and a plus. Like, the cost of acquisition for those guys in Dynasty commands so much, I'll trade them. But they're not, like, untouchable by any means. But it's also the big learning point that I think you and I learned, Mike, is those two are difference makers at the wide receiver position, and the dynasty value they command, it's value insulated something crazy.
I will say this too. Like, I am so torn on this. Like, I've seen the conversations about these wide receivers, specifically these two, and you got all kinds of great data points, like what they both did in their sophomore year. And you got all the analytic data that goes into it, points per game, the whole thing. When I look around at a handful of my leagues, though, Adam, just looking at it and then also looking at warp data. And one of the cool things Koopa put in there is not just the warp data where it lists out in like bar graph form, the top 50, which I was looking off, but he also has these plot graphs and you can kind of see just the difference. And when you look at those secondary graphs, Adam, it's like the elite running backs in scoring for warp and the elite wide receivers. So these two guys that we're talking about are literally like one dot. They're together. And way above them on the graph is the elite quarterbacks. So I think that's what tears me about it, where I go like, and then I just look up points per game. So quickly, bomb squad scoring. So if you kind of think about that, everything that Ray had built that league up as far as scoring, Justin Jefferson's an absolute unit, right? He's scoring 30.8 fantasy points per game through the season. That's what he's averaging, right? That's incredible. That's quarterback, right? That's like having another super flex quarterback in your lineup. The difference is, though, man, Cooper Kupp was at 29 before he got hurt. Tyreek Hill currently still 28.6, right? Stephon Diggs, 25 points. When I go to the quarterbacks, right, you get Patrick Mahomes at 33, Hurts at 33, Josh Allen's damn near at 32. You scroll down to even the back end QB1s, Adam, it's almost 10, 15 points difference per game, right? There's not that difference at the wide receiver because it's still deep. It's still a deep position with a lot of studs that don't cost near what Ja'Marr Chase or Justin Jefferson does. You don't get that at the quarterback position, right? You can't go from a Patrick Mahomes to a Derek Carr and feel good about your life, right? You're sacrificing damn near 10 points per game to go down to that guy.
Well,
and that doesn't feel good.
And now you're sacrificing every point per game because Derek Carr is not playing for the next two. But Mike, like, okay, so I think there's two conversations here, right? Because I'm with you, and that's kind of – you talked about the tearing, like, being torn on this, right? So when you think about it, the quarterbacks, the top 12 versus the replacements, like you basically have the top 12 that are so secure with points per game, their dynasty value, and then you have, like, you're just going to try to go bargain bin shun and find Geno. You're going to find Danny Dimes of this year, Jared Goff, right? But here's the thing, though. Similarly to the quarterbacks, and this is where the dynasty value is so crazy. Okay, so think about this for a second. The guys you mentioned. You got Cooper Kupp, Stephon Diggs. Who are the other ones? Tyreek Hill, right?
Yep.
Let's just say Devontae Adams, right? Okay, perfect. Anyone else?
So six wide receivers in the scoring setting are above 24 points per game.
Okay. Ja'Marr Chase, six. Justin Jefferson, and those four?
Ja'Marr Chase, Justin Jefferson, Cooper Kupp, Tyreek, Stephon, and Devontae Adams. And perfect. The next closest is Amon-Ra at 22.
So. Perfect. Okay, so let me use those six because that's actually exactly what I wanted to talk about, and it fits the narrative perfectly. All right. Let's say, Mike, you tear down because we talk about this a lot with the receiver, and I think this is where those two, though, for me, are a little different. All right, so let's say you tear down from either Jefferson or Chase, and you stay in that range of Cooper Kupp, Stephon Diggs, Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, and you get a first, right? Like in best ball, you're going to say, yeah, that's a win, right? Yeah, if everything goes right for that receiver and they smash and you can move that first for more or you still have the additional liquidity, yes. Here's the difference where I think these guys are more like the quarterbacks, not necessarily in points per game, but in dynasty value, Mike. If you had Cooper Kupp, and a late first for Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase, while he's smashing, you're loving life. When Cooper Kupp goes down, what Cooper Kupp you can trade him for in that late first versus if you had Justin Jefferson or Ja'Marr Chase and they go down, I can trade Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson as they go down. Like, people will come to me 90% and pay me that. Cooper Kupp is not worth a first. Like, you get crushed on the age difference there, where I think with Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson, like even if they tear an ACL, you're going to get someone to pay crazy for those guys because of everything that they've built up in people's minds, dynasty value-wise. I think that's where those two, maybe not necessarily points per game difference like you're mentioning between quarterback top tier and quarterback mid tiers, but what they command and how they essentially stay like a fine wine, like even if they get hurt, they're going to be fine dynasty value wise. I think that's what makes them more like quarterbacks.
It does make me like want to be 50-50 on it, where it's just they are more like quarterbacks, but they just quite aren't there yet. Like if anybody wants to talk about it, like you need to take them at the 104 or the 105, that's where I'm going to draw a hard line, right? There's at least 6-7 quarterbacks that need to go before those two wide receivers every single draft, right? Because hitting on one of those elite quarterbacks is just such a game changer. Whether it's you want to look at points per game or you want to look at warp, you want to look at the differences in tiers between the elite guys at the quarterback and the wide receivers, you have more options. I do agree, though, their age, how fast they've done it, how fast they've risen – makes me value them higher. And I don't think there's any question anymore, as much as you and I have shit on it over this past year on Jamar Chase and Justin Jefferson, whether it's on the trade show, whether it's on this podcast, whether it's on an AMA or the advice we've given. I will say that is one adjustment that I have made where I now value those wide receivers more closely to where a lot of the dynasty community had been and does value them currently. I will say this, though, there's still some people out there where they're pushing them a little bit too hard, right? And I think if you just look at a warp graph, you go, Josh Jacobs and Jamar Chase. Josh Jacobs has more warp value to your team right now than a Jamar Chase. And it's not because Jamar Chase is bad at football. It's just the different landscapes amongst the position, right? The positional value that we're talking about, where you could get by Adam and you could accomplish some of our earlier goals where we're talking about where you go like, Jamar Chase is so damn valued, I'm going to get Josh Jacobs in 2 first and maybe another throw in. Now I have liquidity. Now I have a guy that's producing. Now I have a guy that can help me actually win a championship. And then when I get to this point, maybe I don't get to buy ever back in on Jamar Chase, right? Maybe he never loses that value, kind of like Kenneth Walker or Mark Andrews, where we're talking about where they come back to earth a little bit. But I could still go get a Stephon Diggs for these 2 firsts. I could still go get a Tyreek Hill in the championship game, where I'm still getting a good wide receiver who's a warp difference maker, not to the level of some of these other guys, but I already, you know, I killed 2 birds with 1 stone and I'm still fucking around with an extra draft pick or an extra piece that I got as
that's,
well.
That's perfect, because Mike, what's crazy is I was going to get to, again, things I've learned and tying all these points in. Quarterbacks, those elite receivers, probably even as much as I made an example out of Andrews, the elite tight ends, the very difference making as far as you can get the points back, and they're still going to retain the dynasty value. These are the type players that I think you treat more like draft picks because of how much they are going to retain. So if I'm going to move a Justin Jefferson, right, Jamar Chase, what I'm going to try to do is get as close as I can. Like in best ball especially, Mike, the way we talk about this, in best ball, if I can get myself positioned for the bye, like even if you're in a league that trade deadlines happen right before the season's over, like I'm positioned for the bye. Okay, now if I want to go win a title, I can probably move Justin Jefferson for every bit of Josh Jacobs, Amon-Ra St. Brown, and another plus, right? Boom. Now I'm looking for that type trade. Whereas if I do that in the offseason and it doesn't go well, you're SOL, because if you made the bet on Josh Jacobs and it's the wrong running back, that's where you get burned, right?
Yes.
But if now if you do it and it's, you know, the Miles Sanders types, the Josh Jacobs types, and you do it timely, like we talked about with all the other stuff we learned, that's where I'm okay with it. Like I'll forego a lot of that dynasty value if I can extract it in full value when it's timely and I'm ready to make the playoff push.
I love it, man. It's a great way to finish the show for me, because I just posted about, if you guys all remember, Dynasty Degenerates way back when, Best Ball League, we talked about a couple trades with spike weeks and consistent weeks that I had made that got absolutely roasted on Twitter. Now, fast forward to now, if you haven't seen the tweet, surprise, surprise, I kind of knew what I was doing just a little bit. This is me just casually gloating. But those 2 trades that I made, that team is in the championship and favored in the championship pretty heavily in that best ball league. But Adam, to your point, that was selling in the offseason Jonathan Taylor and then selling a Devontae Smith and a Kyle Pitts for multiple different pieces, just based on how crusty could I get where this deal is smash accepted. How much do people overvalue the whole lineup aspect versus best ball when you know you need multiple pieces? But to tie it all together, Adam, even though that trade worked out and I'm sitting here casually gloating, I still learned from it, because what you're talking about is I did that, you know, in over the summer months, right? I did that in the summer months. If I did that closer to the season, if I do that in season when Jonathan Taylor has a good week, or even Kyle Pitts, you know how the struggle was for a couple weeks and then he had that smash week. If I would have timed it much better at that time, the return is even greater.
Right.
My risk is even less. I now have a few weeks of data to look at and to see the guys that I wanted to play, because in all reality, Josh Jacobs was a part of that Jonathan Taylor deal. Maybe Josh Jacobs did come out the gates and it was a split with him and Zamir White, like everybody kind of thought it was. And all of a sudden, Josh Jacobs isn't catching passes and he's not he's like a 10-point fantasy scorer. It looks a lot shittier, right? But right. I assumed all that risk by making it in the summertime versus in season at some point, or at least closer to the season. So same thing with the Kyle Pitts, Devontae Smith deal. I ended up getting a little bit lucky. I think the only reason it worked out is because it is best ball and there were so many pieces coming back on the other side. You know, it's like a 1-for-4 deal. There's four pieces coming back on the opposite end. So
yes.
I will say this. If you tie both of those together, what I learned with best ball that you can still exploit it, but also exactly what you're talking about, timing, when to do it, treat them like your draft picks, right? Hold them. Don't be so willy-nilly with it in the off season. I think that is the perfect way. And I'm not going to say perfect way because no matter what we do, Adam, in our entire career, we're just over a little like a year and a half of us podcasting and actually putting our thoughts down and recording. We tweak and we get better every single year. There's always something that I want to improve on. So I'm not going to say it's the perfect way because next year we may be sitting here at this very same time going like, okay, that worked a little bit. Let's try to take it to the next level. Let's try to think of how else to tweak this strategy and what else did we learn. But I will say right now, heading into 2023, when I'm doing roster construction, I'm trying to build contenders, when I'm looking at my teams, I'm applying all of what we talked about here, and especially what you talked about with the best ball teams, with those elite assets. That is something that's going to be in the back of my mind. Like, don't do it in March, Mike. Don't do it in June. Don't do it in July. Have some patience. Take a deep breath. These assets are still going to be elite in September. You know, if you want to get off Jonathan Taylor for the multiple pieces, you want to get off of Kyle Pitts, you know, do it week one, do it week two, do it week three, whenever you feel like their value is at the peak and people want to pay for it and you have a little bit more clarity and less risk in what you're acquiring.
I think that's the big thing. And I'll say the last point, Mike, for me is I think it actually goes both ways. We talk about like tying this all together, what I've learned, right? So, you know, we made bets on particular situations or players. Some of them paid off, some of them didn't. A lot of them we had paid off. I mean, what Tua's not going to play next week, and he's been up and down. But for what we got Tua in the offseason, he's a win, right? Brandon Ayuk, a win. We had plenty of wins. But we had some big losses too, right? And for me, like, my biggest loss was Cam Akers. And when I think about this, right, it's the same concept as Jacobs, but they're going to be different ways they get there, right? So Josh Jacobs was going to be more like the decline. So you're buying in the summer. You would have actually won by variance and buying a dip there. But it's still not timed correctly because you just got lucky that this was the year he popped unless you felt very confident, right? Cam Akers, if you would have bought him in the offseason, was the opposite. Okay, so you bought him in the offseason thinking hype. Like you were on Team ATM. Like, this guy's talent, situation, it's all going to pay off. But if you look and think about it, right, the time to buy both of them probably best, because you don't know. Like you said, Zamir White could have came out and done something different. They didn't opt into his fifth year. What if they were really looking for something else? What if Josh Jacobs didn't pop that way? Mm-hmm. Like, that variance exists. What if he would have rolled his ankle week two? So Zamir White plays more, and then he's still in the mix. He's still good, but he's not getting that feature workload. You think about buying Josh Jacobs midway through the season. Okay, so his value has accrued, but he's still not in, like, anywhere near untouchable range. Someone will sell you Josh Jacobs week 8, week 9, week 7, right, when you're feeling good more about buying him and his situation's better.
Yeah.
The opposite's true about Cam Akers. Like, if you're a truther on Cam Akers, and supposed to be an overexposed on him in the summer, when he is asking for a trade and doesn't get one and isn't playing for a team, like, you're not going to lose buying him. Because if he goes to zero, you're buying him damn near at that. You could buy him for a late second easy in places, dude. Nobody wanted anything to do with Cam Akers outside of people that are absolute truthers. Like, if this back part of the season where he's having these big RB weeks don't happen, okay, but you didn't pay for that. Like, you can buy guys on the dip and on the upswing timely mid-season based on dips and ups because Josh Jacobs doesn't cost really what his up is in warp, Mike, if you buy him in mid-season. Cam Akers, when he's at a plateau, just because of draft capital, like what he's worth as far as the upside. Like he was, you get him a second, third places. People were panicked on him. So you can buy both of those mid-season as opposed to putting your chips on the line in the preseason before you even know what your team's going to be.
That's right. I mean, you had damn near, the whole month of September, right, to buy Josh Jacobs. I just had to look it up on Keep Trade Cut, man. September 30th, he's still RB28.
Exactly.
You had a whole month. You had 4 or 5 NFL weeks to buy Josh Jacobs when people are still devaluing the piss out of him. Still hate him. Comes out, scores 30 points 1 week. No one cares.
It's no Josh cares. Jacobs. There's preconceived notions that can't be overcome until the end of the year when he's doing it, you know?
But I'd much rather, like, how much better do you feel about buying Josh Jacobs right after you see him put up a 30-point week and people still hate him than if you were to buy Josh Jacobs, like I said, you're buying him in June or July, right? You have all that time for things to change, all those NFL weeks, all the preseason for something bad to happen or some questions about his usage. Like, just wait till week 4, man, and then buy Josh Jacobs. You'll be fine.
Exactly. And I think that is summarizing it all together, how you can take all the points and utilize it at appropriate positions for your advantage, right? Josh Jacobs had gotten to the point for people where he was a former first-round startup pick going into year 2, and everyone had soured so much that it didn't matter what the kid did. He was going to be Josh Jacobs, man, the gross Josh Jacobs. So you can use those things, plus the fact that you have time to assess your team and the injury risks before you start making pushes on your draft capital and making a direction pick. I think really all the 4D process still applies, Mike. It's just we're much more aware and rigid on timing of when you do it, not necessarily just doing it in the summer.
You remember a couple years ago, this is the last thing I got, buddy, and then we'll bounce out of here. But you remember a couple years ago, our first year in Bomb Squad, and you and I are both competing rosters. And how long into the season were we sitting there going like, nobody wants our damn draft picks. Nobody wants to trade for the first round. All along, man, that was the play. That was actually a gift from heaven, right? You wait until right up until the trade deadline, you still got these draft picks. And now the situations are much clearer. The values are much clearer. You know much, you have a much better idea of what you're actually buying into and what kind of risk you're assuming. So
that's
I just remember you and I both having these conversations and being frustrated about it, that nobody wanted to trade for picks. But all along, man, last year it was staring us in the face. That's the actual right process play. And here we are in 2022 going like, yeah, we need to do that more. need to be carrying those picks into the season.
And you know what else? And I think this is a point I learned. Last part I learned is a short summary to that point, right? In the start of the year, sometimes you're like, this team's ready to win and football's finally kicked off and you're just ready to contend, right? And I think you're looking at other people's teams, kind of roster baiting them, saying, he's not ready. Let me send him my first. But these teams don't want to take a first yet because they haven't made a direction pick. They haven't. Mm-hmm. It hasn't hit them in the face. Yeah, man, you ain't it. Like, they still have that hopium. You know, they still believe that this is my team, even though we all can see clear as day it's not going to happen. Well, as it goes on and you're getting to the more mid part of the season, later part of the season, and it hits them in the face. Now that pick that you have, which you haven't lost out the risk of, oh, crap, I had all these injuries I can't control. They're actually willing to take now. So you lose a little bit of value because it's going to be more of the late one, right? But it's still highly valuable. But now they actually want it. Whereas if you trade that pick to someone when they don't want it, you're going to overpay. So don't do that. It's just, you're right. It smacks you in the face. It's so much better to wait and see it out and then send the first when that other team really values it and they've made a direction pick too.
All right, man. I love it. Next week, just a little preview, Adam. We're going to dive into, we did it last year, we got to do it this year. Our biggest player misses. You kind of touched on some of them, but there's a giant list. There's such a giant list.
We'll have at least one episode. Misses.
Yeah, we'll recap week 17 if there's anything that went on. Maybe gloat about any championships we won, but it's going to be a Debbie Downer for Adam and I, but I like to put our L's out there publicly. I don't hide behind them. I don't delete tweets. Adam, you don't do the same. I wear my L's proudly, and that's how I get better and learn. But it's the week of L's, man. And I can tell you Antonio Gibson will be on that list.
Yeah, well, and that's kind of, I guess, a good summary to finish this up here, right? One, the people here at 4D, Mike and myself, we are never going to hide behind the fact that we missed, because the human element of Dynasty and Fantasy is you're going to miss, right? But as you learn, what are the people, the things, the assets to miss on versus not miss on? And Mike, kind of what I was touching on there with the Cam Akers and Josh Jacobs talk, okay? If you get overexposed to Cam Akers in that first range, like, that burns you. Like, that was one of the things that did burn me. I have a lot of rebuilders where I'm cool. I have value. I've been able to eat some of that value loss. But that particular bet was a loss for me, because imagine this, right? When you get the 23 first type value, fifth, sixth, seventh round startup pick Cam Akers was, like, that lost a lot of value. But Mike, if you buy it at the right time, like, if I have overexposure of Cam Akers and I bought when it's like, okay, this is still a second round running back that's young, like, I think he'll land somewhere on his feet, and I bought that late second range, I'm okay overexposed there. You know what I mean? That's kind of why it's such a big difference, because the L on Cam Akers is that you bought at the wrong time, because now he's on a horrible team that nobody wants to start people on, and he's hitting, right? Like, even Antonio Gibson, if you would have bought at the appropriate time, isn't going to give you a huge L. We got L's because we bought him at the wrong time. But yeah, that's really this episode here. If you enjoy listening to our L's, you probably do, just for humor's sake. You need to tap in next week, because we're going to go a full episode in. But that was kind of our process. We appreciate everybody, especially you winning the YouTube giveaway, giving us the content for the show.
Shout out to our band, Dr. B. Harris, for that one.
Dr. B. Harris, man, getting the YouTube giveaway. One of our Survivor's Tier members. We appreciate a dope topic to discuss here, what we learned. And I hope everybody listening took a little from that, because I think those are some of the big principles we learned this year, where a lot of our process, I think, was right, but it's always refining and learning where you missed and where you can shore up. Those are the things we learned. So I hope this helps you out and shapes your view and thought processes, because this is it. This is the last week. Someone's going to win a title, and we're back into rebuild mode, baby. Every single one of us is thinking 2023. And just remember, when your league mates are playing chess, play 4D chess.
Let's get to do it. We're out of here. See you next week. Same time, same place. Peace.